Hey, man, during this Warrior playoff run, the Warriors are always the top story. I don't think so today. I think that giant win last night is the biggest story of the day because it was crazy. And if you missed it, the Giants had an 8-2 lead built on Joc Pederson's two home runs. The Mets scored 7 in the 8th inning to take a 9-8 lead. The Giants come back on a Joc Pederson three-run homer. Took an 11-8 lead. Joc Pederson hits his third homer to tie at 11-11. Mets score in the 9th to go ahead 12-11. Giants put up 2 in the bottom of the 9th to win 13-12. Joc Pederson drives in his 8th run. Brandon Crawford with the walk-off. With that, I exhale and welcome Will Clark on the UMA guest line. Will, how about that for a ball game? And good morning, brother.
What's going on,
Will? How are you, man?
Yeah.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Sorry we missed you guys last week on an airplane and could not do the show, but glad to be back. And last night, my son Trey and I watched the fireworks unfold. We watched the whole ball game, and as you put it, a very apropos, wow.
We got to start with Joc Pederson hitting three home runs. Will, we've gone through the list on Baseball Almanac of, you know, Giants who've hit three home runs. Mays and McCovey did it multiple times. Gary Matthews did it in 1976. Darrell Evans did it. Kevin Mitchell did it. And then lately in the juice ball era or launch angle era, Mike Yastrzemski, Alex Dickerson did it too. Pablo Sandoval obviously did it in the World Series. Just for you, I don't think you ever got there, Will, unfortunately, but for you, the idea of three tanks in a game.
I didn't get there, you know, in the major leagues, but I got there a bunch in the college ranks and then also on the Olympic team.
Nice,
so
nice,
very, very familiar, very nice. Familiar with it. And, you know, being in that situation, you know, just getting some pitches to handle and just not missing them. You know, it was really good to see Joc yesterday. You know, he started out like a house on fire, and then he had a little groin injury that he was nursing. And so he wasn't able to kind of, you know, get through to baseball and get completely turned. And so he was missing some pitches. And then now he's back to being healthy again. I know that he had a little talk with Barry Bonds yesterday and kind of fired him up. And he took that motivation into the ball game. First at bat, he got an inside fastball that he just absolutely tattooed to right. Second at bat was it was either a sinker or nothing change up down in a way that he whacked out there to center. And then, you know, the third homer, a three-run shot, was another fastball in, and he McCovey coved it.
Hey, what do you see in his swing and his approach? Is there anything like that reminds you of anybody? And, I mean, you know, strong kid, obviously. I mean, this goes back to his high school days. They say
at, you know what? He, yeah. He reminds me a lot on the left-hand side of Matt Williams. Matt was, you know, kind of similar to Joc, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 220, 225 pounds. And, you know, they don't get completely turned on their back foot sometimes, but they're just so strong that they can get the bat head through the zone. And so, you know, when I watch Joc, it's a lot like watching Matt Williams swing from the right side.
He's so strong. And I mean, so much of that is just kind of man strength, isn't it? I mean, like, yeah, of course, little guys can do it, but you like to have a big old honking dude up there.
Burly dude, yeah.
Smacking it, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, there's you know, you try to overpower the ball, you know, when you have that much strength, and there's not a lot of finesse in there. And, you know, a guy like Joc, I mean, you know, and he even said it before, you know, he's going up to home plate trying to hit everyone on out the ballpark. And, you know, when you get pitched tough, you have to kind of back down sometimes and maneuver the ball around a little bit. But, you know, that's not his mindset. And God bless him because it worked out yesterday.
He does look like a guy who, I mean, and I can't, you know, I'm not a big league hitting coach, but he looks like he swings for the fences. Whereas you, Will, I mean, and if you follow Will on Twitter, by the way, you see just all these beautiful highlights all the time. And it's just so great. It's so great to watch the swing. But you weren't, yeah, you hit your bombs, but I don't think you were swinging for the fences. I think, in my impression, you were swinging for line drives that happened to leave the yard. Whereas I feel like Joc is swinging for the fences. Do you think, is that right or wrong? What do you think?
No, you hit the nail on the head right there. So, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, when I was up at the plate, I was trying to hit those god-awful two irons. And, you know, if you catch one of those two irons and you get just a smidgen, you know, up underneath it. Needless to say, the ball leaves ballpark, you know. But, you know, if I dead center one, then I got, you know, doubles and RBIs and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, yeah, Jock has a different mindset than I did. But, you know, he's also playing in a different era, and they're being taught different things than what we were taught.
Your buddy Kevin Mitchell, who hit three, I would characterize him as a guy who swung for the fences too. Is that,
Kevin is a lot like Jock. I mean, you know, Kevin, you know, he got down after it. You know, he cut it loose. Big old strong guy and swung a 35-35, and he got that thing through his zone. But, you know, there were also times where Kevin would, you know, get down in the count, and he'd kind of shorten up his swing and go to right field, right center. And, you know, so he's a little different in that regard than Jock is.
It's funny, my lasting image of him is swinging. I can't imagine him shortening up and going to the right side, but you're saying he did it. That's awesome. And listen, guy won the MVP, so, and he stands for it. Yeah. By the way, you are listening to KMBR and KMBR FM San Francisco, the sports leader, a Cumulus Media station. You know, it's interesting, you mentioned Matt Williams. His name came up, we were talking about Joey Bart. And, you know, you know, Will, every Wednesday when you come on, at some point we're going to talk about Joey Bart because he's such a hopeful character for the, I mean, like if he performs, the Giants will be in really good shape. And he's having this tough go. But I remember Matt Williams struggling. And,
yes. Yeah,
I mean, Will, it happens, right? And it doesn't mean that you can't play in the bigs, but it means that you have to make either some kind of adjustment or what? I mean, is there a comp there at all between Matt Williams' early struggles and Joey Bart's early struggles?
You know what? It was kind of a little different. You know, Matt came up and, you know, he scuffled with like breaking balls. Joey's scuffling with some inside fastballs. And, you know, to be totally honest with you, he's had a little problems with that in the past in the minor leagues. And we've kind of talked about it, but just, you know, he hadn't had a chance to make that adjustment yet. And, you know, now that he's on the major league level, and, I mean, I hate to say it, but he's racking up the strikeouts. You know, he's got 42 strikeouts and 76 at-bats. You know, when you start racking up that many strikeouts and that many at-bats, it's time to make an adjustment, big boy. And so, you know, I'm going to be headed out there here in a few weeks, and don't think I'm not going to be sitting at his locker and giving him some advice.
There. Nice.
Well, okay. Hey, listen, Jock, Barry talks to Jock, Will talks to Bart.
Yeah, well, I'll take that.
I will take that, man. You go talk to the doctor. Go see Dr. Will. You know what I mean?
So, There you go. I hate to say it, but, you know, I mean, you know, this is a big business. And what you did in, you know, Little League and high school and college and everybody patting you on the back and all that. In this sport, there comes a time where that goes out the window and you got to say, hey, I'm not here to pat you on the back. I'm here to make sense of why you're missing the pitches that you're missing. And right. We're going to fix that. So
nice. The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Hey, Will, if we had done this show yesterday, we would have been talking about this losing skid, you know, if you're the Giants, you'd be like, yeah, we're losing games. We don't have Brandon Belt, Lamont Wade, Austin Slater, Kurt Casale. So, I mean, you've been around the game all your life, and injuries can be excuse or they cannot be an excuse because then the Giants start bringing up guys nobody's heard of, Fairchild and Padlo and all these guys. So, I mean, going before last night's game and that little skid, was there some alarming stuff going on with the team, do you think? Or do they just kind of have to wait till these guys get healthy? Because you're in this division with the Dodgers and the Padres, Will.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, every team goes through little losing skids, and you want to hold them to a minimum, and you don't want it to keep going on and on and on. You know, injuries are part of the sport, and, you know, if you guys follow the Giants, even with, you know, 107 wins last year, you know, we made quite a bunch of roster moves. And this year we're doing the same thing. You know, you mentioned the guys that are hurt, you know, Belt and Slater and Wade and Casale. They're going to be, coming back into the fold here in a little bit. But in the meantime, you have some guys, and it's the other guys that you mentioned that got called up. It's like, hey, look, it's time for you guys to shine. If you want to prove you're a major leaguer, here's your opportunity. Take advantage of the opportunity. And while that door is just cracked open, mm-hmm. don't be afraid to kick that son of a gun wide ass open and bust your ass up in here and say, I am a major leaguer.
You know what, Will? Like Mike Yastrzemski did. Like, he could have been one of those guys who came and went.
Right.
He could have easily been one of those guys who came here for 2 weeks and then they sent him out. And he went and he kicked that damn thing down.
You got that right. And that's just one example of numerous players that, have taken advantage of the opportunity and went on to have a nice major league career. You know, the one thing, and this kind of flips the subject around here, but the one thing that's a little concerning to me is the fact that the bullpen's been giving up a boatload of runs. The bullpen gave up 10 last night. They gave up 7 the game before. And those are the things where, hey, look, especially when we have a lead, if you're going to give up, runs, which everybody's going to give up runs, let's try to keep it to 1, all right? And that's the saying in baseball, stay away from the crooked numbers. If you can stay away from the 3s and 4s and 5s and stuff like that, guess what? We'll be able to get it back for you. But you start giving up, like we talked about, 10 runs yesterday, 7 the day before. You start giving up some crooked numbers like that, then you put a lot of pressure on the offense.
You know, a little bit of an alarming stat, if the Giants had lost that game, we'd be talking more about it. This is 3 straight games where they've given up 10 or more runs, and that hasn't happened since May of 2000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is funny because
that's correct. You know,
2000 was a good
Logan
year.
Logan Webb did a great job yesterday.
Yeah.
He was 5 with only 2 given up. And, he turned it over into the bullpen, and instead of getting a W, he's sitting there watching a seesaw back and forth game. So, like I said, baseball is one of them crazy ass games. You're gonna get a little highs and lows, and you just got to ride it out. But,
hey.
The guys who are in the bullpen, they have a chance to get the ball every day. And, you got to have that thick skin, and you got to have that short-term memory loss. Hey, look, what it happened yesterday is over and done with. Now it's time for me to buckle down and do the job today.
Yeah, good stuff. Will Clark every Wednesday, man. We love having him. And the Giants get the win. The Giants are 23-19, man. They're 4 games over 500. And any other season, you're happy. You're playing winning ball. It's just that skid was tough. And, man, they got that win last night. Maybe it's the one that turns things around.
Because
they
could
get away game today against the Mets and then off to Cincinnati where you should go kick some butt. But it's the big leagues. You never know. Just a couple last things for you, Will. It's always great doing this on Wednesdays. And I know you had an event out here in San Francisco last week, too. It looked pretty cool. I saw some pictures at the Olympic Club. So glad to see you out here in the city, and you're coming back out in a couple weeks. But the idea that the Mets are in town, and Paulie and I are, of a certain age. When baseball was ruling the roost back when you were playing. And the Mets, you played when the Mets were good, 86, 88, times like that. The Strawberries, the Goodens.
The Keith Hernandezes.
Yeah. I was wondering, I know you guys only played them a couple times, a year. They weren't in your division. But did the Mets stir something in you? You guys had you played against some great players there, some Hall of Famer level guys.
Yeah, I mean, when you played against the Mets, as you mentioned, their teams back then, they were upper echelon team on the east side of the division. And, it was always fun going to New York. Whenever you play in New York, with all the craziness and the fans and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It was always really interesting, but it was always fun to play those guys because we were on a roll, they were on a roll. And it was just a great matchup. And so now, here they are. They've turned things around. They're doing a great job in their division. And, kind of like you said, we get a chance to hopefully win the ball game today, win the series, get a little 2-game winning streak before we head on the road. And then we go to Cincinnati, who, needless to say, is having a very rough season. So that's one of those ones where you put your head down and you're like, boys, let's just go in there and thump some people. And, then after that, we go to, Philadelphia and Miami. So, they got a nice little road trip coming up, and hopefully they win today and they kick off the road trip in great shape.
Hey, Will, how's a Louisiana boy do in New York City?
Ooh.
I mean,
how's a Louisiana boy do in New York City? Well, it's kind of funny that you said that. I had some family friends down here in New Orleans that had big time connections in New York, and those guys would take me out to some of the restaurants and plays and
Yeah.
shows. And matter of fact, we had a day game one time in New York, and I got a chance to go see Tony Bennett.
Nice.
So, yeah, so
That's cool. Yeah, man.
I love it. Well, walking in your cowboy boots and Tony's doing some I Left My Heart in San Francisco. You're like, I know that place.
Well, you got that right.
I got to ask Will one more on the those mid-80s Mets. What was it like to face Dwight Gooden at the peak of his powers?
So Dwight Gooden, I would compare a lot to like a Brett Saberhagen. You know, above average fastball, 95, 96. And over-the-top curveball. He came up with a changeup a little bit later on, but the first few years he was just a power pitcher. But the thing about Dwight was he just absolutely could spot where he put that fastball. So a guy like myself, you know, that was a big challenge, and I relished it. I look forward to facing him.
Nice.
David Cone was there.
You
know, he did some different things. Bobby Ojeda was in a bullpen. Roger McDowell was in a bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sid Fernandez was another one of their starters. So, you know, I mean, you know, the Mets back then posed quite a few problems, but at the same time, you know, if you were in the middle of a lineup, you relished facing those guys because you want to face the best.
As a man who played first base with some skill and some gold, what did you think of Keith Hernandez as a first baseman?
Oh, my goodness. He was, you know, not only playing first base, but also hitting-wise. You know, he was an MVP, and, you know, every time I'd get the first, or Keith would get the first, we compared notes. And, I mean, you know, one of the notes that we compared, believe it or not, was Oral Hershiser. I had been having a little rough time with Oral, and Keith and I talked about it at first base. He gave me a little bit of a game plan on how to face Oral, and
nice.
I took it into the next few times we faced him, and I got multiple hits off of Oral, you know, two or three games in a row. So
nice. That's,
you know,
killer.
That's a direct result of, you know, having a conversation with Keith Hernandez on first base. So, you know, for me, he was kind of the prototypical first baseman. That's when the major leagues did the transition away from sticking outfielders at first base and just saying hit. Keith was the first true first baseman that was a first baseman that moved around a lot, was a great athlete, and did his job at first base.
I love that. He helped you beat Oral. That's fantastic. That's a city kid helping out the Giants. I like that. South City kid, Keith Hernandez. Last one's kind of a big one, though. I don't want to leave it. We can talk about it maybe later this summer, but I know you do the No Filter with Burns, and you guys talk about all the stuff, but they debuted the automated ball strike system in AAA this week. So now it's getting closer and closer now. So it's now in the Pacific Coast League. It had first been in the Independent Atlantic League and the Arizona Fall League. Now it's all the way in AAA. And they're saying it's a little bit of a wider strike zone, 19 inches, including an inch on either side of home plate, which is, of course, 17 inches wide. The top and the bottom of the strike zone are supposed to correlate to the batter's height. Any pitch that clips the zone is supposed to be called a strike. So I don't know if you've experienced it or talked about it and your early take on this, Will.
Well, my early take on it is, you know, all of these stupid-ass rules that are being imposed on, you know, baseball is absolutely diluting the game. It's bad for the game. It's not good for the game. And, you know, we talked about it before when I was in AA Richmond earlier this year. They implemented the shot clock. So now, you know, you got shot clocks in AA. You got the automated strike zone in AAA. You know, when you start doing away with the human element, and by the human element, I'm talking about the umpires. When you start doing away with that, you are going to raise some ire from the Umpires Association. That's first off. Second off, you know, you cannot have this game, you know, with all the history behind this game, be an automated game. That's not the way this game is supposed to be played.
All right. Will says no to invasion of the body snatchers, Paulie. All right.
Yes,
invasion of the baseball snatchers.
No, we cannot have that.
Don't get me started.
No zombies. No, man. Hey, man, it's great having you back. And I know you had a great time last week at the Olympic Club event. And I can't wait for you to come back out. We're getting ever closer, Will, to the big day in July, man. So you're
still. Yeah. Yeah, we're knocking on about 2 months away. The speech has been written.
Nice, man. Nice.
The speech is being practiced. We're trying to make sure that I can get through it without bawling out there. And other than that, you know, I mean, as of right now, the game's a sellout, but I'm really looking forward to being out there on the field with 45,000 fans that had originally started at Candlestick and now are at the beautiful Oracle Field.
Hey, you're talking to two of them right here, man. So, all right, Will, be good. Have a great Wednesday.
Thank you, Will.
We'll talk next week, man.
Gentlemen, look forward to talking to y'all next week. Y'all have a great one.
There he is, Will Clark.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.